Hello, welcome to Values, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I'm Magla Pillay and I'm here today in the studio with Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. Sister Denise has a special interest in what she calls conventional values, and as you can see in the set behind you, it's a Grecian theme, which means that this talk will be taking the form of what we call Socratic dialogue, which means that I will be putting questions to Sister Denise in order to arrive at a truth that's universally understood. We will ask you at home watching today to look into yourself, into your heart and mind, and ask yourself whether your own ethical values, your virtues, your moral compass is where it should be. To that end, we wish to welcome Sister Denise into the studio with us today. Thank you for joining us, and a very warm welcome to you.
Thank you, Magla.
The subject that's of interest to us today is the value of spiritual practice. From the commencement of the show, you have included your spiritual values, your practice, in everything that you do, whether it's the law of karma, whether it's the ethics of nonviolence, etc. So I would like us to spend this half hour so that we can focus specifically on what you mean by your own spiritual practice.
Spiritual practice is a set of disciplines that you bring into your life, and there are plenty of disciplines involved in the practice of Raja Yoga, which is the one that I do, as described at the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University. So spiritual practice involves what we call four subjects. One is the study of spiritual knowledge. The other is the practice of yoga, Raja Yoga, which is meditation. The third is the inculcation of divine virtues. And the fourth is service. So we need to have a balance in all of those. Your day also needs to be balanced. So we also look at the very beginning of the day as the foundation of the day. And so the first part of the practice is the early morning meditation. And we have a fixed time that we work with, which is 4 o'clock in the morning till 4:45. You could start earlier, you could continue longer, but that period of 45 minutes is very good to begin your day. And of course, people would have to work up to that. You can't necessarily just start off doing that. But once you have established that as a routine in your life, a rhythm, it then becomes something like the fill-up of the soul for the day. And then in terms of the meditation, there are periods of time throughout the day where we stop for specific moments, minutes of meditation, and then also give the self a good half an hour in the evening. Then spiritual study. The spiritual practice of meditation prepares the mind to receive spiritual knowledge, because spiritual knowledge is very subtle and it is being addressed directly to the soul. And if you take it in what we call body consciousness, you'll take it very differently than if you take it in soul consciousness, which is what it's intended for. The next level is that you absorb it in your way of being. We call this dharana. And dharana means partly to absorb the meaning, but also to reflect that in terms of how you operate, how you think, how you speak, how you conduct yourself. And then the final level is service. And the service is that, you know, if you are an embodiment of yoga, of spiritual wisdom, of the virtues that are absorbed from God, then whatever you do will be of benefit to others. So in that way, these four subjects are covered incrementally.
Okay. Mr. Denise, would you like to share with those listening how this has transformed your life, the way you are now? Were you like that when you joined 40 years ago? Were you a different person? How has it helped you personally?
I think it's a bit difficult to put your finger on it because it's a slow process that takes place over a long period of time. And when I entered into this practice, I definitely changed my lifestyle quite a bit, but it did correspond to the thinking that I was doing anyway. And I think that the actual practice of meditation, the lifestyle of early waking, vegetarian food, giving time to spiritual study, really changes your thinking. And when it changes your thinking, then it changes how you act. And gradually I started to get more and more involved in the activities of the service center, because Brahma Kumari's activities are conducted through service centers, which are all over the place. And so over the course of 40 years, you know, it's been a slow process and there's been development. Anyway, a person develops over the course of their lives, you know, from your 20s to your 60s is a whole lifetime. And how one would have developed otherwise is hard to say because you didn't do that. But definitely, I think that it's created a very clear way to navigate the life. It's made priorities very clear. The principles that we practice in terms of vegetarian food, I have adopted a practice of celibacy. We also don't use recreational drugs, alcohol, anything like this. So it becomes a very pure lifestyle, and you start to look for like-minded people. Definitely there's a change in lifestyle. I think there's also a change in one's kind of psychological makeup, because you have to really work on yourself and really grow. So I feel that it's been a process that has enabled me to mature well as a human being. So I'm quite satisfied with how my life has developed.
Sitting here, I can sense from you a waves of peace emanating, and it's quite palpable, and I hope you listening at home can feel it, because it's quite real for me. You mentioned in other programs that one of God's qualities is the ocean of peace. Most people in this world, peace is a distant memory. Okay, so how do you go from being a person who's a peaceless and anxious or depressed or any of those negative qualities to somebody who vibrates on the same frequency that you do? How did you take that which belongs to God and make it your own and keep it? The reason I'm asking this question is every word that you speak carries a depth about it, which is very beautiful. It says to me that you're coming from an authentic space. So you hear the word peace and then you feel the word peace. So walk us through that transition.
I think the thing that's tricky is actually to meditate well. And to meditate well, you have to be focused, because it's really, you're creating a kind of laser beam between the point of light that is your own self, your own soul, and the point of light of the Supreme Being. So you want these two to connect so that there's a kind of a conduit, a tube through which the energy of God passes into the soul. And so I have spent many, many hours working on this over long periods of time. And you know, the spiritual journey is not just like you start at the one end of the motorway and you keep going and get to the other end of the motorway. It isn't like that. It's a road with many twists and turns and ups and downs, and you cross many different terrains. All of this is internal, but you are moving forward. So sometimes we call it the pilgrimage of remembrance, because you have to remember what it was like to be you before anything ever happened. And you also have to remember forward.
What does that mean?
We see time as a circle.
As opposed to linear.
As opposed to linear. So okay. That means if you remember back far enough, you get to the future. And if you move forward far enough, you get back to the present. So looking at time as a circle like this, you can actually shift your sense of memory forward as well as backward. And so you're looking at what I'm becoming, what I was, what happened to me in between, a kind of restoring the self to a frequency or a vibration that is the correct self, which happens when you come into resonance with God, you see, because God's state of being is absolutely stable, absolutely perfect, absolutely pure. And you return to your own perfect note, if you will, by resonating that way through this mental connection, which we call yoga.
Okay.
And so, in whatever way you need to do it, you do it. So there's a lot of experimentation that goes on. You practice this way, that way, the other way. And I think each and every Brahma Kumar or Kumari does it differently, even though we're all given the same instruction, because it's very much about how you interpret what you're studying. And then you also, I mean, I have very good access to people who are very experienced and expert yogis, so that friendship and companionship also gives me very clear insight and actually seeing good yogis, how they go about their spiritual practice, help me to navigate my own path.
You mentioned taking power from God. What I want to know is, every human being on the planet has a dark side. And it, for some, it's extremely dark, as in they have behavioral patterns that are self-defeating, defeating of others, violence, etc. How does one manage one's dark side, having connected with God the way you do? What do you do with your negative traits, of which there may be many?
I think what you do is you continue to take light, and the dark of your darkness continues to become less dark. Every so often it'll erupt, and you have to just give it space to do its eruptions, and then it quietens down and slowly dissipates. And this is why it's, in a way, a lifelong process, because your dark has to slowly, slowly melt, evaporate, fall away, because it's false. And as you make yourself more true and you take in more light, more energy, the vacuum left by the loss of spiritual power that gets filled by negativity, the space for that negativity gradually disappears, and so the negativity disappears with it.
If one wants to lead a family life, have children, have a job, and yet still practice spirituality, can they? Does all spiritual people have to look like this?
It's not a dress that makes you spiritual or stops you from being spiritual. You can dress any way you want. Everyone is in some or another context. This is the uniform of the Raj Yoga teachers, so I'm free to do that, so I do that. But majority of people are involved in their families and their professional environments. They have responsibilities and so on and so forth. So everyone has a context. My context is the headquarters of the Brahma Kumaris, which is a very large community of spiritually minded people who are doing their spiritual practice. There's many, many departments, and so I work within that. I travel a lot, so this is my context. And so, you know, I'm coming into contact with all kinds of people. The process of traveling, you have to go through security, airports, trains, boats, planes, whatever. And I also have my family who I will meet from time to time, and my friends, and so on and so forth. So everyone has a context. Everyone has karmic accounts that come up for handling, and so you deal with them one at a time as they come up. But you create a rhythm of your spiritual practice, the rhythm of meditation, study, and so on that I mentioned earlier. And you're always being tested, because everyone has weaknesses, and the tests that come are there to strengthen you or to inspire you to strengthen yourself in areas where you see that you are weak. You may be lacking in one or another virtue or one or another power. You may be short-tempered, you may be impatient. Any number of things are there, because your character is your work, and then your service, the way that you convey the aspects of spirituality to other people, that is also a service.
Okay. You mentioned earlier karmic accounts keep emerging. How does one manage a particularly difficult karmic account? Say, if you have an acrimonious relationship with another person, or started off having one with another person, or you have a very serious illness in which you are in a lot of physical pain, what values do you use in what it is that you learn and take from God that helps you effectively manage that, where despite those two things, those examples that I mentioned, you can still say you feel that you're leading a successful life?
Well, when something comes up, you have to deal with it. So for that, you need power. You need power of tolerance to handle physical pain. You need the power of accommodation to manage people with difficult characters. And the circumstance itself actually forces you to raise the level of your power. And this is actually beneficial, because at the end of it, you end up more powerful and more experienced.
What would be your definition of being successful at leading a spiritual life? How would you know if you're doing it right?
Well, there are many things that come to you that are unexpected, and sometimes that can be so disruptive that you really call into question what you're doing and why you're doing it. So you have to cross over these obstacles. And I think success is when you are able to discern well what the obstacle is, what the test is. You raise the level of your personal power and your capacity, and you cross the obstacle, and you're then ready for the next one, because they keep coming. Mm-hmm. I think success is don't give up. You know, the power to keep on going on is a good one.
Okay. Perseverance then.
Mm.
Okay. Mr. Denise, what have you learned about God in your spiritual journey that you would have not have known otherwise?
Hopefully.
Well, apart from peace, which you have, what else have you got from him? Because my sense of you is that, let me put it this way. For many, God is words, God loves me is a very commonly heard phrase. But I've always questioned, to what extent do people actually feel that? Now, my question to you is, your feelings in respect of God, could you share that with us?
What I think is very interesting is to be able to make contact with the mind of God. So my mind and God's mind can communicate with each other. That's very powerful, because otherwise people have no idea that you can have access direct to the mind of God and communicate, commune, converse. Is one thing. Another thing is God is extremely humorous.
Okay. You have now my full and undivided attention. Do tell. How do you hear humor from up above? Is there thunder?
Well, thunder isn't an attribute of humor, but I don't know.
A little thunder? God is humorous. Okay.
God has a sense of humor.
God has a sense of humor. And how does he show that he's laughing or makes you laugh?
You know, God is the teacher. That means that God has means to communicate what he knows to us through his medium, which is Prajapita Brahma. And through the teachings that he gives, the sayings that he gives, you get a sense of how much he finds the human beings quite amusing in how they try to deal with things, how they try to fool him, how they try to, you know, manipulate him, this and that. So, a lot of humor, a lot of very loving humor, because, you see, people really don't know God, and sometimes God will say, you know, you really don't understand me. I'm present for you. I'm showing you how to come close to me. So just come. Sometimes people think that they don't deserve to enrich themselves with the treasures of God, you know, and God will say, well, make it available more. God is very kind. Very sensitive to your feelings, very aware of the traumas that you have been through, and kind of accompanies you in your process of repairing and coming back to the realness of yourself, the reintegrated self. God says, I am with you at every step, you know, so you can sort of take advantage of that. God gives many blessings, but then says, well, you have to use them, otherwise you lose them. And so, you know, there are many people who are against the idea of God as a being, but I'm very comfortable with it. But definitely God is not a human being. So I like very much that I can have a relationship with an extraterrestrial, which of course God is, beyond this world. But not a little Martian with big eyes and a little green man or whatever it is, but so different from what the assumptions are in the various different traditions. God is also very subtle, reciprocal. Sometimes God will draw him, herself away so that you have to make yourself more subtle to come and be with God. So there's just thousands and thousands of different attributes that you can actually develop a relationship with this complex and unusual personality who is discarnate, who is really unknown by the people of the world, but you can gradually come to know that who he is and how she is, and yeah, very special.
Mm. How do you feel validated by God? How do you feel seen by somebody who does not have eyes? How do you feel embraced? How do you feel loved by somebody who does not have a physical body? Do you feel on a different level than others?
Well,
from what you're saying, his method of communication has to be in a different medium because he's not physical. not physically embodied. So how do you receive that which he is giving you? How do you feel acknowledged by God?
God is able to come to you to make you aware of the totality of the presence, of the personality, of the atmosphere, the feeling. God is able to be with you in very, very subtle way. And if you are in what we call the avyakt stage, that is, you yourself are in your subtle consciousness, then you can be very close. And you can come together and you can interact very beautifully. It's very intimate, it's very private, it's very subtle. So not everybody could appreciate it, not everybody could understand it, but it's a personal thing. But definitely it is there, you know. And to a degree that a regular person of this world could never match, never match.
I'm compelled to ask you, how do you know that your life is balanced? How do you define a balanced yogi life? What are your boundaries? What are your parameters that make you feel that you're living the life that you want to, you're living in the real world and still spiritual?
Well, you have to have a balance of yoga and study. You have to have a balance of yoga and service. You have to have a balance of action and being. You need to have in your day balance of activity, rest, thinking time, social time, all the different things. And if you have the balance, you will feel intuitively that it's right. And when it's balanced, everything starts to move very, very well and very fast.
Okay, that was quite an educational experience. Thank you, Sister Denise, for sharing her personal experience on God. And I hope that what you took away from today's talk by Sister Denise is that God is not an idea, He is not a concept, nor is He an object. He is a living, real being who is waiting to be in a relationship with you. And the sense I got from what Sister Denise shared is that which He has given to her, which she already has, He is also willing to give to you. And I don't think that her take on God is exclusive. She shared that He's quite willing to share that which He is with every single one of His children on the planet. So I do hope that today's show did inspire you to rethink values as far as your own spiritual journey is concerned, and also take a deeper look at what it is you would like from God and how to attain it, not in terms of a concept, but more in terms of a relationship. I really enjoy the idea that God is waiting to relate to you, being. Sister Denise, thank you so much for what you shared with us today. And thank you for making this a truly divine spiritual experience. And once again, I hope you are able to receive the peace that's emanating from this yogi with 40 years of spiritual practice behind her. I thank you for joining us, and good day.